It's the eve of Uncrowned Saturday, baby. That's right. We're back again. It is a massive, massive day of combat sports. Tomorrow, that's Saturday, you've got the Royal Rumble from the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia. You have the boxing event, Teofimo Lopez versus Shakur Stevenson from MSG. And you've got UFC 325 from Sydney, Australia. It's an awesome, awesome list of events. We have everything covered at Uncrown. Look at these beautiful graphics that we've got here. Absolutely stunning. Get over to Uncrown now. Wet your beak. We have a lot of shit going down. I mean, brilliant articles from, of course, all of the brilliant MMA team that we're going to hear from now in just a few minutes. But we also have fantastic things on the Royal Rumble. And I believe Big Time Ben Folks has been editing these as well. He is a massive, massive WWE fan. If there's one thing I know about Big Time Ben Folks, it's that he is a massive, massive WWE fan. And of course, we've got brilliant boxing stuff from Elliot Worsell. I was reading earlier. He is the great table setter for boxing in this day and age. So make sure you read that. The focus today is going to be on Volk v. Diego Lopez, of course, because we are, in fact, an MMA show. But we might hit these topics later on in the show. A lot going on here. Of course, we have our esteemed guests, as always, Big Time Ben Folks and Chuck Mendenhall. I'm really falling over that today. I really can't get Big Time Ben Folks out of my mouth, but I wish I didn't say that now. That is... It's out there. I've been struggling through this intro and I'm struggling again. But I was just about to say, lads, before we get chatting here, surprise, Ben Folks is here because got some reports today. I think On Air Jordan has it. You know, he might have missed a few shows in November and I think we know why now. As you can see, a buffalo struck an ATM machine in Montana and a man who was wearing a hood and fleeing from the scene is now $200,000 richer, according to reports. Many people have flagged this. Many people. And they think it's you, Ben. So when's the last time you were on an ATM machine, if you don't mind me asking you?
First of all, isn't it a moose? Is it a moose that hit it? I mean, here's the thing. First of all, one of the things that annoys me is when you see reports like this and they'll be like, a man in Montana. Do you have any idea how big Montana is? Be more specific.
Oh, here's his alibi. Montana is a big place. Really, Ben? Come on.
Montana is the size of Germany.
Oh.
Just let that sink in. It's the size of Germany, and just in terms of like square mileage, and you're just going to be like, a man out there. Because let me tell you something. It makes a big difference whether that happens in Billings or Missoula or whether it's in Malta. You know, it's because if that happens in Glendive, yeah, it's what's up there. If that happens in Glendive,
or
everybody who's, well, Butte is a whole different story. Butte's its own thing. But if that happens in one of these small towns, I don't care what kind of hoodie you're wearing. Everybody in town looks at it and they're like, that's Richie. We know that's Richie grabbing that money. Here's what I want to know, though. Say you find yourself in this situation. You're not robbing an ATM. You're not going out there. You're not the one breaking it open. You're walking home. There's money on the ground. Are you going to tell me it's illegal to pick up money off the ground? Don't you dare tell me that, Chuck. Because I'm saying, you're walking by. You're just going to be like, oh, there's tons and tons of money on the ground. I should alert the proper authorities.
You know what I love about this, Ben, is you don't even mention the weird part that this animal, whatever it is, a buffalo slamming itself into an ATM. I mean, you just skip over that part as if that's normal wherever you're at in Montana.
You know how many deer I dodge while driving my children to school in the morning and in the dark early hours? That part is like the most believable, normal part of it for those of us who live in Montana. You know, especially you ever encounter a moose. When you see a moose out there somewhere in the world, you go, oh yeah, they're enormous. It's basically a feral horse with a weapon, like a chandelier on its head. And it's not like a cute, cuddly cartoon character. You want to steer clear of a moose. And they'll get aggressive. They turn, they see an ATM looking at them the wrong way. They're not having it.
Interesting.
It's funny, when I was 19 years old, I went to Montana, like up to like Yellowstone, and we saw a moose. And we're like, oh, you know, thinking it's like a cow type thing. Let's go get a picture near it. And so I went over there. I've still got the picture. I was with it. I don't even know, 10 feet of this thing, like throwing my thumb back, like, check it out. Look who I'm next to. And it's only after you did that, like, you know, that people are like, are you an idiot? You know, they kill more people than bears and anything else out there per year, you know? And it's like, Who knew? Who knew? But I made it. He was very timid, you know?
As much as I want to continue to grill Ben Folks about this situation, who has implicated a man called Richie, who has commented on the size of Montana as an excuse, but also did not deny that he would flee the scene with all this money.
I'm picking up that
Buffalo
money.
Accomplice, okay?
You know Richie is code for he's rich right now. You know that, right?
That's what they call him. That's what they've been calling him in Missoula.
Let me put it in terms you can understand. A Guinness truck tips over on the side of the road right down the street from your house. Right, there's cans of Guinness or whatever just sprawled out across the roadway. Are you stepping over them very carefully to make your way home and call the authorities? Or are you maybe picking up a can or two and putting it in the pockets of your tracksuit as you make your way home?
This is a good segue. You're going to segue out of here, aren't you?
Plead the fifth. Listen, boys. Let's not bring an Irish man and Guinness into this, okay? There was absolutely no need for that. It's absolutely wild gone.
Trying to but meet anyway. You where you are, man.
No, it was a great analogy. Lads, we had some weigh-ins today, and there was some drama at the weigh-ins. Thank God it was not for the main event between Alex Volkanovski and Diego Lopez, too. But here they are on the scales, by the way. And we love a dehydrated champion on the scales. And there is Lopez with the stash, with the hair, with the cowboy hat.
Got to get your hat on.
Here's Dan Hooker, newly...
How happy.
I'm still stunned by the tattoos every time. You know, it's been like this for a while, but he is completely illustrated man now. And there's Benoit, Saint-Denis. Yeah, all the lads have weighed in. We were all very, very happy with that. But we had a bit of an issue, guys. The hoop of shame came out and a man used it to his advantage. And I believe we have the footage of this now. Mr. On Air Jordan will bless us with this, hopefully. Needs a minute. Okay, no problem. We're gonna riff on this for a second. So, of course, famously, DC had the towel incident. For those of you who don't know, DC leaned on a towel, took a few pounds off the old scales there when he was weighing in. I believe it was 205 back in the day. We have a new version of this for a man who was, you know, every flyweight weigh-in is weird. I'm sorry. Every time anyone's weighing in for flyweight, I'm just like, this is going to be a disaster. Today, we had one of these disasters with a man by the name of Aaron Tow. He was meant to fight Bat Buyer. Tow, we thought, had come in very safe for this situation. But it turns out, oh my God, where am I going?
You see it?
Did he do it? I didn't see him do it. It looked like he
pulled it off. Yeah, I could see it. I could see it here.
So what happened is they brought out the hoop of shame.
Yeah.
He leans against the back of it. And then John Anik announces weight. He's like, it's 122 for his flyweight fight.
You take off too much. That's how you get caught.
Everyone on the desk is like, oh, that seems a bit weird for a flyweight to weigh in at 122. Commission cop it. Make him stand on the scales without any hoop of shame. And he comes in at 129. Fight called off. So close, yet so far.
Caught so red-handed, you know?
Oh,
that's crazy.
With the face tat as well, I think it just adds to the shame of the situation. I don't know why, but it just it doesn't feel
well,
right.
It's more glaring. It's more glaring. You know, when DC did it, like at UFC 210, wasn't it in Buffalo? Do you remember what number he landed on? Like, because he was right there.
Yeah,
he was right there.
He did it right. He didn't take off too much weight to where it gets suspicious. Just enough. And that is part of the key, but also, it's harder to be the guy who tries to do it after everybody's already hip to it, after you've already seen it once. It's like, I think it was Pop Warner who, in his days of like coaching football, we have a lot of rules on the books because of stuff that he got away with. And people were like, okay, we know it's not in the rule book that says your team can't come out in uniforms that have little footballs sewn all over it, so we can't tell who actually has the football. But we're going to put it in the rule book now because, you know, the reason we have a rule that says you can't run out of bounds, run along the sideline and then run back onto the field to make a play is because they got away with it once. And so like it heightens everybody's awareness for it. That's kind of what happened here. But also it's like you can't take off too much weight.
Yeah.
But if you know you're 129, if you know you're way over, give it a shot. Why not?
But you know what? If you're going to do that, if you're going to go in there and like, okay, I'm going to try to pull a fast one on the commission and everybody involved, show up while everybody is weighing in. Like, this dude showed up like 90 minutes into the proceedings, right? Like, he was the last guy on the scale. You don't bring that kind of extra scrutiny to yourself. Try to get on there while everybody's rushing through and see if you can get by with it, right?
Yeah. If you ain't cheating, you ain't trying. And Chuck Mendenhall knows a thing or two about cheating,
especially. Oh, yeah. Big time. But I would have been right on the nose at 125. I would have just been.
Because you're a professional. Yeah. That's why.
Oh, man. I remember all types of shit going down. Especially like Habib in Abu Dhabi. I was there with Casey. And like, I've never seen a man get on and get off the scales quicker in my life. And Mac Ratna was somehow able to read 155. It was like he just went, boop, and just hopped off. And everyone's like, yeah, yeah. Come on, Habib. Well done, mate. Crazy shit. But do you guys get this when they have the events, particularly in Australia, when you just wake up and all the shit's already happened and you're just so confused? You're like,
yeah,
it's fucking Thursday and what have they done?
It's very confusing.
The press conference has happened? What is going on here? Every time this happens, is it just me? I'm so disoriented.
When they're like this whole thing, they're like, oh, it's February 1st is going to be UFC 325, but it's actually, you know, January 31st. And then it's like, you're already dealing with it just on that alone. But yes, every time this happens, I'm like, wait a minute, this just happened? Like, you have to go back and like figure out what's going on. I feel like I never get used to that. But imagine being on their side. You know, like if you're an Australian and you have to pay attention to a North American sport, I feel like they deal with it way more than we do.
Yeah. They're also used to it, which is one thing.
That's true.
But I would think that now that we're in the Paramount era, they would be like, do we have to keep doing it this way? Because you don't have these pay-per-views to worry about trying to sell back, you know, at least to the Americans. You might still be trying to sell them other places. I know the Canadians are still hopping mad about this situation. But if you don't have to do that anymore, can we maybe get some shows that are in prime time for us, you know, so that it actually feels like it? I also wonder, the people who go to these every single time and love them, would that throw them off? They're used to a UFC event being a Sunday morning affair. Let me tell you, I went to one in Melbourne and it was quite nice. It's quite nice to go and watch one on a Sunday morning. Only UFC event I've been to where the media meal was breakfast. They served us eggs and bacon and stuff. It was great, and coffee. But you're done by Sunday early afternoon. And it's actually quite a nice change of pace, but it's how they do it every single time. I wonder if it would be weird to them to show up, watch a UFC event on a Saturday night.
One person who seems to have struggled with the concept is a man from that neck of the woods, we'll say. He's an Anzacs fighter. It's Dan Hooker. Here's what he had to say about having two sleeps before this fight. And now I have to wait two nights to fight someone. You're telling me I got to go to sleep, wake up, and I have to go to sleep again? I want to hurry up. Not liking this whole 2-day thing. Dan Hooker, the violent man, covered in tattoos now. It's got to be a good thing for fighters, right? To be able to have the extra time to rehydrate themselves.
Yeah. At a certain point, don't you start to wonder what we're doing? Because it already was a little bit ridiculous, because we're going like, this is a 145-pound fight and we take it so seriously. You can't be 145.2 pounds. Are you crazy? You need to be 145 pounds for 30 seconds. And that already is a little bit ludicrous, because we all know what we're doing, that none of these guys are 145 pounds. And then the further out from the fight you get, the more it's just like, why? Why are we doing it? If we're just going to end up like, if we can do it 2 days before, how about 3 days? How about a week before? You show up week before. I mean, honestly, it would be safer. We could still tell ourselves we're doing the weigh-in. It would be safer for the fighters. We'd cut down maybe on people who get sick the next day. Maybe we'd probably get better performances from people who are not having to completely deplete themselves one day before they go in there and get hit in the head on TV. Like, that is already kind of crazy and dangerous. So maybe that's what... Maybe if we just start gradually nudging it back and we all agree not to make a big deal of it, we all agree like, okay, it is kind of silly, but it was already kind of silly. And at least this is getting less dangerous type of silly. Maybe we could all live with it. Because, I mean, I see what Dan Hooker is saying. Like, it's stressful. The more nights you have to go to sleep being like, there's a guy who's spent the last 6 to 8 weeks preparing and training to hurt me. That's probably difficult to sleep. That'll disturb a fellow's rest, you know?
It seems like the people who are local to, like, because you remember Tom Aspinall and even Leon, right? Like, when they were having these shows in the middle of the night, I know you were there, Pizzi, but, like, it feels like they have the harder time adjusting to win the fights. Like the people who are visiting, they don't know any different, right? They just come in, they try to acclimate, and then they just go with the schedule they're given. It seems like the people who are used to being there and maybe their families or whoever's around them are all on the normal schedule, and they're like, dude, I have to, like, you know, be altered. But psychologically, it seems to bother the local people more, doesn't it? Like, that's traditionally been the case when you see these things.
Yeah. Yeah, no, absolutely. It's just the only thing I'd say, like, if they did decide, like, let's bring it back, how many people are automatically dropping away class? They're like, oh, yeah. They're like, there's something about fighters where they're like, yeah, okay, you're giving me an opportunity to be safe. I have to now make it more dangerous.
Yes, yeah. I mean, everybody's looking for an edge. And then at a certain point, if other people are looking for the edge, then you have to follow suit just to not be left behind. I mean, that's what the weight cutting that we have already kind of is. Because you see a bunch of people where we're all starving, depleting ourselves to a dangerous degree, all just so that we can end up fighting someone approximately our size at the end of the day. And like, you end up in this arms race. And so, yeah, I'm sure if you did move it back, unless you moved it back and you were just like, all right, everybody, listen, weigh-ins are now Wednesday, but whatever you weight you are, whatever division you're in right now, listening to the sound of my voice, you're still in that division. Don't come up in here and be like, I was thinking bantam weight, you know, like we're not having it.
Imagine Wednesdays, like Anthony Johnson would have been trying to get down to 155 pounds back in the day.
Oh my God. God rest his soul. But speaking of talking points going into this event, Volkanovski was in hit with the retirement talk quite a lot. He has dispelled it, of course. He has like endlessly been like, please stop asking me this question. We see this all the time. It happens with champions. Once you get over that age of 35, it is coming. Even with Katie Taylor, one of the greatest boxers of all time, she is constantly having this retirement talk up until recently where she's like, maybe this is my last year. But Chuck, is it disrespectful at this point, or is it just a natural kind of consequence of getting longer in the tooth?
No, I think it's natural, because what is he? He's 37 years old, right? 37 years old. And I think a lot of times it wasn't like he came from, you know, that he's been in MMA a long time, but he's been a pro athlete. He's been an athlete for a long time. And in fact, like, he morphed from a 210-pound rugby player down to a 145-pound fighter, and he's done everything. Like, he was 13-0, which is just crazy to think about, the guys he went through. But 13-0 as a featherweight, and made his name as maybe the GOAT in that division, if not for sure the GOAT, right? Like, he's a guy who's done that. There's just a point, you know, and then you go up, you have a pretty close fight with Islam, you lose the second one badly, but there were circumstances to that, and you look at all of that and you say, like, what's left? What's left for you out there, you know? Especially if you lose, what's left? And I think that it's just natural for people to be like, you're not going to hang around the game. And PT, you'd mentioned this, and I know we've talked about it before, especially for a guy who has admitted, or at least confessed on some level, like, you know, I don't idle well. My mental health tends to be like, I get stir crazy, and I, you know, it's better to have a fight. And I think, like, you know, given those types of situations too, you're like, are you dealing with that? Like, cause it seems like you're getting close to it. And I think people just want to know, like, how he's going to handle it when he is at that point too. But I think that it all comes down to, dude, when you've had a legacy that long and say that you lose, right, what's left for you out there? And it's just a natural kind of curiosity for a guy like that.
Ben, what do you think? I mean, Chuck mentioned it there. I think the thing I worry about for Volkanovski, like, I think he's one of the greatest featherweights of all time, if not the greatest featherweight of all time. That revelation that Chuck mentioned just a moment ago, before the second Islam fight, he had only beat Yair Rodriguez 3 months before, finished him, and then he's back fighting Islam. He loses to Islam, and he comes out and he says, honestly, like, I just need to have that goal. I need to have something that I'm gearing my life towards. Say the worst case scenario happens for these Australian fans at the weekend, and Diego Lopez makes better on his second round knockdown as he had in the first fight, and he knocks this dude out. A lot of people would be saying, as Chuck just has, you know, what else is there for you, Volk? But it will come, like, I just have a feeling that he's going to have a very hard time walking away from the sport. And that is, of course, one of the tragedies that we see in combat sports. Most, BJ Penn, Tony Ferguson, the list is endless. Do you fear that Volk could end up in that situation? And I'm aware I'm asking you this while he is in at the top of the mountain. You know, I know it's a weird time to ask, but it's something that does... It's something that comes back to me about Mr. Alexander Volkanovski.
Yeah, I mean, he does seem like one of the smarter fighters.
Yes.
And like one of the more self-aware fighters. So I don't see him as being somebody who hangs on to a ridiculous degree. But I think that it is way more common for people to stay a little too long than to leave a little too early. And when you do leave a little too early, as a sport and a community, we are not that cool about that either. Like, look at Habib. You know, he left a little earlier than anybody thought he needed to. Dana White was taking him out to every restaurant on the Las Vegas Strip, trying to talk him back into it. Fans were going, we don't believe it. He's going to be back. We were just not primed to understand that. And so I could see a situation, especially even if he gets through this one, even if he beats Diego Lopez again, the next guys that you see up in featherweight are tough. They're tough stylistic matchups. The you know, guys like Movsar, Lauren Murphy, guys like that, where you're just going, it's going to get pretty tricky to stay there if you're Alexander Volkanovski. And so I think that you can see it coming on the horizon where you're going like, all right, you're not going to be able to stay at the top forever. It's amazing that you stayed at the top for this long. He doesn't seem like the kind of guy who's going to take one loss and be like, well, that's it. That's the writing's on the wall. I'm going to go home now. He does seem like that's only going to ignite that competitive fire in him. Fighters get really hung up on how they end sometimes. And I think maybe too hung up, where they go, they lose one and they go, I don't want to go out like that. But hey, if you turn around and you win the next one, you're not going to want to go out like that either, because you're going to be like, see, that's proof. I don't need to go out. Yeah. And we've seen that over and over again. I don't worry about it that much with him. I think, will he overstay? Yeah, probably. But I don't know if it'll be an egregious example of it. He seems like the kind of guy who's smart enough where, and interesting enough, he can go do other stuff. He needs to figure out how he's going to replace this.
He's got a good sense of humor, too.
Yeah. He's got a sense of humor, and he's good on camera. People are going to want to do stuff with Alexander Volkanovski. He's not just going to go from, like some fighters face, where today you are so-and-so the UFC fighter, and as soon as you retire, you are that guy who used to fight, and they can't live with that. He's better fixed than a lot of people to move into something else. I think, though, that one thing you hear from fighters is they go, you can't start looking for a replacement of what you get in this sport, because nothing else is going to give you exactly that.
Yeah.
And you can't become too reliant on that.
I will say that part of his frustration in being asked this is, we already kind of went through it, because after those knockouts, right? Like, people are like, dude, you know, what's going on? He shows up and puts on like almost a master class, right, in that first fight with Diego Lopez. And I think that he was like, does that answer all your questions? You know, here I am. I've still got it. I'm still the exact same guy. And it was, yes, he got hurt a couple of times in the fight, but he controlled it. It was he outclassed Diego just about everywhere in that fight. And I think in his mind, he's like, guys, I just showed you I've not diminished anywhere, right? Like, if he goes out there and does it again, obviously we're going to be like, how long going to keep this going? But from his perspective, you know, like if the people are like, hey, Ben, you know, you haven't written a good column in, you know, 4 years. And then he puts out his masterclass, you know, you'd be like, look, I still got it. Can we shut up with that talk already? And it's offensive after a while.
I mean, it did happen to the big homie Ernest Hemingway, where that's people true. Were like, bro, you're done. And he did it a couple times where he was like, here's for whom the bell tolls. Here's the old man in the sea. What now? The
Any big titles, or were there just those ones?
The difference, as Hemingway himself told friends of his who were in pro boxing, was our failures stay in the drawer, or they go in the wastebasket.
That's a great point.
You know, and when you're a fighter, you go out there, and one of the truest things that Dana White has ever said is, in this business, you can get old overnight. You just show up one day, and we see you don't have it anymore, and you have to find out in an extremely that's painful fashion that you don't have it. I especially think, because you imagine if he loses to Diego Lopez here, you know what Volkanovski is going to say immediately afterwards is, it's 1-1.
Yeah.
Run it back. You know, like, and it's going to be hard to argue with him, because he's going to be, he made this same point when they had him fight Max Holloway over and over again, was he was like, are we going to have to keep doing these until I lose one? And he will probably feel quite rightly like, hey, I did that. I fought Max Holloway over and over again. I turned right around and fought this guy again. You owe me a rubber match. You owe me that opportunity if you make me keep doing these rematches. And it'll be hard to argue with that, honestly.
Poor Movsar and Lerone, they're just forever behind the eight ball.
Do you think that fight ate, like, the performances age badly for Diego? Because he did have that moment, he put Volk down in the second round. Granted, Volk came back and he landed some brilliant shots himself to the point where I think two of the three judges gave him the second round. You know, he wrestled back the round.
Yeah.
Then Lopez had a great fourth as well, I thought. So I think he won one round on two judges' scorecards and two on another's. And I think he had an argument for two rounds. But the way people talk about it is kind of similar to the way people talk about Valentina Shevchenko v. Manon Fiorot in the aftermath of the Zhang Weili fight. It's like, look at the dominance here. She's so good. But really, you know, Ben, I think it was like, you know, Diego had a shout there in the second. He put him down for a minute. You can capitalize on these opportunities. Do you think people are underestimating what this guy brings to the table? And that's why the UFC have given him this spot again.
You know, I think we always knew he brought that to the table, right? Mm. Power, the ability to just in one big moment, turn it all around, maybe end a fight. I think we knew he had that. I think the challenge for him, especially in this particular matchup, is Volkanovski has typically been one of those guys where he gets better the more he has seen of you. He gets 100%. Smarter about how to beat you, how to take you apart. The more just total time he has to be in the cage with you and look at you, the smarter he is about beating you. And there's going to come a point, inevitably, for everybody where that intelligence he has, like that line on the graph is going to cross paths with the physical decline of age that is inevitable for everybody. We just don't know if that's the point yet. Because right now, though, I still think, like, if you're Diego Lopez, it would be hard not to look at this second opportunity and go, I just need to go nuts on this guy. You know, I need to just be more aggressive. Because that is a good way to walk into trouble against Alexander Volkanovski, is just telling yourself, like, I just got to get in his face quicker, earlier in the fight, and not let him off the hook, because he is such a smart fighter. He can turn that against you really easily. And he probably is expecting you to be doing that. He's probably expecting Diego Lopez to have come out of that first fight hearing a lot of people go, you should have put your foot on the gas more, man. You should have just thrown caution to the wind. And I would think that, like, that's the hard part for him, is like, Volkanovski is so intelligent as a fighter and such a good strategist, and is one of the great all-time mid-fight adjusters. If he sees what you're doing and you're doing something different, he can adjust during that round. He'll adjust on the stool, come out different the next round. He is so good at picking up reads on the fly and adjusting his style accordingly.
You know, Pizzi, I know we talked about this, like,
in the round table, right?
Well, yeah. Well, I remember we were talking about Diego in the first fight, and we're like, hey, if I'm Diego, I'm going out there and I'm trying to take his head off in the first couple of minutes, because he was chinny, right? We were like, whoa, he's chinny, like, and he's going to have some trepidation to engage because he doesn't want to get clipped early in a fight. And his big mistake, honestly, is I hear what Ben's saying, but maybe one of his mistakes was maybe not starting fast enough. Like, he went in there and he felt it out, and what happened was, it was almost like Volkanovski settled into his rhythm. He settled into just kind of getting into the fight, and all of a sudden those counters are landing, both hands, big counters, and as soon as he got the chance, he's got him on the fence. I think he might have taken him down in the first or second round. Like, he was just kind of mixing it up, but he got into the rhythm of what made him who he is, right? And Lopez did nothing to disrupt it. He was just headhunting. He was just headhunting at that point and getting beaten up. So it'll be very interesting. Like, you know, when you work yourself back into why are they fighting again and all that, it'd be very interesting to see how this fight starts. Does Diego go in there, like, you know, a little more, I don't want to say incautiously, but a little bit more offensively, where he's like, I'm going to try to get to him early and see what I can do. Does he do that this time? How does it play out? I mean, I think that's where it's at. Who makes the adjustments? And as Ben was saying, in fight, or certainly when you look at the Holloway series, like in the returns of that, like how he solved him in the second going forward after the initial flurry, and how he just basically dominated the third fight, you got to trust that Volkanovski is going to come in there with his adjustments, and he's going to think he knows exactly what to do to beat you this time, right? So how does Diego respond? Like, this is like, that's the fascination to me. What does he do different?
It's an interesting thing, because Paddy Pimblett is being slated more than any fighter in the world right now, coming off that fight with Justin Gaethje, I'd say. But his shadow looms kind of large over this co-main event between Dan Hooker, who's a massive underdog, against Benoit Saint-Denis, who's the guy on the tear, who seems to be just not really being talked about here. He's been on a tear ever since the loss to Renato Moicano, following his loss to Dustin Poirier, I believe it was. 3-fight win streak. Hooker, of course, coming off a loss, but he has this massive beef with Paddy Pimblett, who, even though he's being criticized, is one of the most talked about fighters in the world at the moment. I guess the bookmakers think Benoit Saint-Denis is going to go through him. And if that happens, or if it doesn't happen, does it even matter, Chuck? Is the Paddy Pimblett fight the one that the UFC are going to try and make regardless of the outcome of this co-main event?
I mean, it would be better if Hooker had a decent performance, at least in a loss, right? If he just gets smoked in this fight, I think it loses some steam. But because, you know, I've been thinking about this, like, because the drama that there's, I feel like drama is going to translate a lot differently in the Paramount Plus era. Like, if you get Bad Blood and stuff, they've aligned so heavily now with theatrics, like, even with all the shows they have, you almost wonder if it's going to kind of play into this. And it's just such a built-in rivalry that they've already got going on. With Paddy already having lost, I mean, that's the fight I would make. Like, what are you going to... And I still think that even if Hooker loses this, you could still point to, like, man, he is going against the who's who, the best of the best, yeah. Right? And like, so you can't really fault him. And honestly, he squeezed in, like, I thought he was going to lose to Gamrot, and somehow he found a way to win that fight. So it's like, I feel like his... It'll extend beyond this a little ways. Like, you know, I think he'll still have the relevance to go in there against Pimblett, and it still look like a big fight to me.
Ben, you had a great piece about Gaethje, his like amazing run with the UFC, everything he represents. Do you come away devaluing Paddy Pimblett the way others have? Like, I mean, Josh Barnett, Matt Brown, the list is endless of people just kind of poking fun at this guy's performance against Gaethje. And I'm not here trying to say it was a masterclass in any way. Like, it was a complete brawl. But do you think he's being unfairly criticized in the aftermath of that fight, or is it as they say?
Well, when I saw Josh Barnett's criticism, and I've known Josh Barnett for a long time, and I went, the grumpy old man in you is kind of getting the better of you a little bit. And I don't mean that necessarily as like a harsh criticism of Josh. He cares about the sport. He is a technician. He's a student of the game. Yes. He maybe was not the kind of person who is going to enjoy that fight the way the rest of us will, because you've showed the rest of us a messy, no defense kind of brawl, like it's 3 a.m. in the bar parking lot, and we go, hell yeah, brother, this is a good time. We're having fun watching it. And Josh looks at it and just goes, how is this the main event of a UFC? These guys are just out there just winging it. And I understand, but it also was like, you had to understand, I think, for that fight, what we were being offered. It was a title fight in name only, but it was a fun matchup of personalities and styles and stakes, even if no one came away from that going, those are two of the best lightweights in the world. I mean, honestly, by the time we got to the fourth or fifth round of this, weren't you going, hey, whoever wins this, Armin Sarukian and yes. Ilya Topuria both wad them up. It doesn't matter which guy comes out of this. And I think for Paddy, I was incredibly impressed with Paddy's toughness and his recoverability. Like, there were moments in that where you look and you go, he's just about done. Justin Gaethje is just about ready to put him away. And if Paddy got a few seconds to rest and recover, he was right back in it. And I was very impressed with that. And I think he does deserve some kudos for that. That said, there were also moments where you could watch what was happening and go, if Paddy was a better fighter, this would be an opening for him to maybe win this fight. Because Justin Gaethje is not who he was. He's still able to do a lot of the Justin Gaethje stuff. But there were moments where you could see him getting clipped. You could see him getting cut. You could see that predictability that has always been a little bit part of Justin Gaethje's style. You know where his head's going to be. He's going to be dipping it off to the right at least a dozen times during the fight. So, and Paddy just couldn't really capitalize on that because he's just not there. And there's a temptation. It has been for a long time for us to look at Paddy and be like, there's some raw stuff there. He will get there.
Yeah.
But it hasn't totally happened yet. And that's the thing that I think people are looking at and they're going like, if it hasn't happened yet, you've been a pro for a while now.
Right.
You've been at this level for a while now. When will it happen? Because it sure didn't it happen there. And there were openings.
Well, you know, like we're talking about Diego Lopez. You're like, did he do everything he could do to win that fight? And you're like, no, he could have done a lot of things smarter within that fight. You're like, okay, that's what makes intrigue for the second one, that you think there's this other level of potential. And also just having some in-fight IQ, you know, that will like come into play. I thought that Paddy coughed up all his charms. You know, it's like he gave it everything he had. There's a difference when you watch a guy who does that and you're like, he still comes up short, than a guy that you're like, ah, he just didn't do this or didn't do this. That was the problem, right? Like, I felt like with Paddy, it was like, I felt like we watched the best version you're going to get of him. And he still didn't come up, you know, he didn't. So there's this part of you that's like, okay, maybe this is the, you know, the contender thing was a step far. And, you know, I was one of those guys who was advocating like, yeah, put him in against Ilya. Let's just do it. Let's just roll this thing. And now you look at that and you're like, that would have been a bad idea, you know?
Yeah. I think nobody is going to argue that this is a better card than UFC 324, but Volk made a great point at the press conference, whenever that happened, maybe Tuesday, I don't even know. But he's like, the collection of fighters on this main card is gnarly. Like, it is a gnarly, gnarly card. Like, you can see a finish in nearly every fight there on that main card, bar the main event, of course, which has gone the distance before. But the one that's taken the biscuit has got to be Fazayev v. Hoofy.
Taking the biscuit, is that good or bad?
Taking the biscuit is a great thing. I mean, winning
sounds
the biscuit.
Do you not like biscuits? Yeah.
I mean, who doesn't like biscuits? I mean, okay. If you're taking the biscuit, you're like, yeah. No? Just me.
All right.
As long as you get permission. You're just
cookies,
taking the
right?
biscuit.
The biscuit is a cookie?
I actually mean cookies.
Okay,
yes,
all right.
I mean cookies. This one takes the cookie.
That's nice.
Fazayev
It doesn't even sound right coming out of your mouth.
Listen, it's a good fight, isn't it, Ben? Fuck's sake.
Yeah.
Nothing coming out of his mouth is good today. Like, this is highly censored material.
An aneurysm live on the show.
I think, honestly, every time I look at Rafael Fazeev, I kind of think we are always sort of underappreciating what he can do, just either like a mix of circumstances and like who he's fighting. Like, he can look really great at times when he's able to do his stuff. Like, that guy is a tough opponent. He's a tough stylistic matchup for just about everybody out there. And it's all, this though is the kind of fight where you're like, I can see a world in which he is forced to fight a kind of fight that is not what he would choose. I could see where he's like pushed a little bit to a different sort of pace. And that will be interesting to me. I think that as far as which fight feels like the most of a coin flip, which is to say the opposite of what I think we see in Tai Tuivasa and Taljan Teixeira, this is the one for me where I'm looking at, when I was sitting here making my picks, trying to stay at the top of the food chain since I went 5-1 to start.
All right,
the year.
We're bringing it up later, Ben. Okay, you don't need to just drop it in there. Okay, let's not talk about who's
he's alphabetically on top right now. By the way,
alphabetically on top, and I'll take it. The toughest one for me to pick was Fazeev.
That's tough.
No alphabetically it's about it for me. I'm just bottom. I'm just bottom of the league. Spoiler alert, we'll talk about it in a while. Oh, fuck.
Here we go.
We're going to do it right now? Okay. Let me just make this screen bigger because God knows my eyesight.
Yeah, because I can't see that.
All you need to know is right up there at the top.
Is that you, Ben?
5-1.
Chuck. I mean, basically the crack podcast on top as far as I'm concerned. that's the way I see it. And Mysterious, Frank.
And Mysterious, starting strong.
Right,
I don't know if you saw, Pizzi, but when they put this graphic into Drake's preview, his UFC 325 preview, which I don't know if it's up yet, but if not, it should be soon. The caption, and I believe this is, you can talk to Drake about this, I believe he wrote the caption, because I went through and edited it last night. I didn't touch the caption. I just want you to know that. The caption he put under this graphic was, "Can Pizzi Carroll climb out of the basement?" Like, that's all it said. It was just like, it was nothing else but focused on, by the way, if you just glazed over this whole graphic, I want to remind you, Pizzi is in dead last.
I'm glad as an editor, you didn't touch that, Ben. You just let that go. Let's
I was just like, you know what? That's a choice that Drake is making as an artist, and I respect it.
Let's bring it up. We may as well do this section here. Let Ben and Chuck have their flowers as top of the league, representing the Crack Podcast.
That's right.
Crack Podcast is top of the league. Once again, I will say that.
It's a win for us all, really. Yeah.
Can we see it again, please, Jordan, just for a second? Right, so let me just see. We're all roasting. Right, you've gone Elkana there for your wild card pick. Everyone going with either Elson or Rosen or Elkana. Okay, everyone with Salkill. Everyone with Teixeira. Ooh, Fazayev. Oh, here we go. Fazeev.
Yeah.
Fazayev. I don't know how to say his name. Fazeev. Chuck and Ben both going with Fazeev. Carol has Hoofy down there. Everyone. Am I the only one with Hoofy? Me and Mysterious Frank are the only ones with Hoofy.
This is your chance. You want it out of the basement.
Okay. Al-Shadi's gone with Hooker. Sandini. We're all on Sandini other than Al-Shadi. So I'll get that one back on him, possibly.
And then, he's already counted his losses here.
only Chuck going with Diego Lopez, it seems, right?
I'm surprised. Give us the logic
there, please, Chuck. Give us your logic, please.
It's because they went to that country concert together, isn't it?
Yeah.
It is.
It is, actually. He was very excited about it. Anyway, I remember him saying, like, maybe I fight him in Australia. That's how he said it. He was very excited about fighting in Australia. I think that he's been waiting for this moment. I don't know, man. I'm counting on him coming in there with a little bit of a different game plan. And I still think if he lands, like we saw a couple of those shots in that fight where he kind of hurts Volk. I just think if he lands that shot earlier, hurts him, Volk may not come back from it. It's just one of those type of things. He should lose, to be honest. Like there's every reason to think. I rewatched that fight recently and I'm like, Volk just kind of outclassed him from pillar to post. You know what I mean? So like, unless he comes in and tries something to set up his shots a little better or cuts off the cage a little better, it probably doesn't happen. But I keep imagining that he just lands that big shot and puts him in trouble, and that's the beginning of the end.
I just kind of hope he wins now so you're ahead of Ben, because this is just too much. I just kind
of, it's untenable, you know.
All right, there it is there.
They just lop it off. That's what we should do, is relegate the loser. Like,
I think in fairness, Al-Shadi made such a big deal of the losers. A bigger deal than he made of Drake last year.
He did.
The losers being New York, Rick, and Ben Fox. I'm just saying, just factual here, okay? I think they should, okay? Whoever is, I'm going to be bottom for a while, I feel. I did make a claim that I'd win it this year, but I feel that's already dead. I feel 1 week in, I was like, you know,
there's a lot of picking left to do this year.
There is.
Don't sell yourself short. Who knows what's going to happen by the end
of
the
year. I do this in the fancy football league.
You guys like the wild card? It kind of adds a spice to it, though, right? Like
I do like it, but it also seems like people are going down the list and just being like,
who's the biggest
favorite on the card?
Yeah, because
that's what I went for. That's
yeah,
what
right now the
week.
Stipulation is you can't choose anybody that's -1,000 or worse, right?
Lord knows I tried twice.
But we should probably shorten that to something like, you know, -400 or something like that.
Maybe each week we bring it down 900, 800, then it just caps.
Ooh, okay.
Yeah.
I mean, honestly, the UFC does such a good job of matchmaking generally that there are not that many fights that it's, you know, Bellator undercards.
I was just thinking that.
You know, or some of even like the PFL undercards where it's just like, we got a Nurmagomedov against a warm body who we found, and those odds would be like -1,500.
And you'd be looking at, you'd be looking at -3,600 and be like, that's pretty good value for like a Nurmagomedov, you know?
I'm putting 20 grand on it, so I mean, I'll get something.
To win your 150 or whatever it would be.
I just thought it was interesting, Ben, in your mailbag this week, you talked about the possibility that we're headed towards another growth phase on the release of the numbers that the first Paramount PLE, whatever the hell we're calling it, event got. But this comes just a few days after we were like, this is as big as it's ever going to be, guys. And now your question, like, could we be headed for another growth phase? So those of you who say we are negative, correct them.
Yeah. Please.
Well, honestly, the question is response to somebody saying like, hey, with the way the Paramount deal works for American subscribers, are people going to watch less total events and just like tune in for a fight or two? Because if you got the subscription, it's just on and you don't need to be making any sort of conscious decisions about like, is this worth me watching? All that kind of stuff. I can just pop in for the main event. And I do think there'll probably be more of that. I also don't think the UFC and especially Paramount care. As long as you were keeping that subscription on, they're not worried about whether you're sitting down at 4 o'clock in the afternoon for the prelims. They just want to know that they get your money every month. And I think that maybe it'll change the calculus in that way. But I also think it works in the other way where a lot of people go, hey, $9 is nothing. And I say that I'm an idiot. I spend $9 on the dumbest shit you can imagine. I do it every week. And so $9 to keep this subscription on, and then I can remove for myself even the question of, hey, UFC 325, is that card good enough? Is that it's not as good as UFC 324. Do I care enough? I don't have to ask that anymore because it's just, I got the subscription. I might as well pop in and watch it. And so I think that you're going to get a lot more people. I mean, you saw the numbers that Paramount put out where they were just like 5 million people. Or watching this stuff, and you sit back and you go, yeah, it makes sense. More people are going to watch it at $9 than we're watching it at $92, you know, like that's just logic. And so you're going to get people more willing to give it a shot, more willing to just sort of like be like, all right, let's see what this is about. Let's see what they got tonight. And who knows, you might end up getting, like, you should end up getting more people to at least give you a look and find out if they enjoy it, if they like it or not. I think that they're pretty well positioned here. I still don't think Paramount's going to make $1.1 billion back. I don't care how many Ram truck ads you squeeze in there. I don't care how NASCARify you do your broadcast. You're not making that money back. There's just not enough MMA fans on the planet to make that money back right now. But I do think that for the UFC and for those of us who like this sport and want to see it continue to be a thing and maybe even be like a more popular thing that won't get us strange looks when we talk about it, I think that you're pretty well positioned. You're better than you were when you were on ESPN and you're asking people to clear two different paywalls in order to show up and watch your stuff on a Saturday night.
The strategy of having two pay-per-views up front, right? Like the kind of like, let's get all these, like a million subs, you know, is nothing to shake a stick at, especially when I pointed this out before, like, but the UFC, when it went to ESPN Plus, was basically a package deal to launch ESPN Plus. It was like they were the flagship. They were the ones who were going to build it themselves. Whereas the UFC was going into this one and the shtick or the novelty of it was that, hey, you don't have to do pay-per-view. So to kind of front load it with like a couple of events where you're like, normally you'd pay and you don't have to, you're getting these for free. It seems to be paying off in that number, right? Like a million subs, and we'll see what it does this weekend. It's not going to be a million subs, but you take them combined in the month and see kind of what you got in subs, and it's off to a good start, man. It certainly doesn't look like it's hurt at all.
Well, and especially when you look at that number where they say the average viewership number for the main card was around 5 million, maybe a little under 5 million. Yeah. And you contrast it with what's the highest selling UFC pay-per-view of all time, as far as we know. And it's Habib versus Conor. So a different time period, basically, and a different time period, especially for Conor McGregor's stardom. And you got 2.4 million buys. And if you're doubling the number of people are watching, right. I mean, and sure, granted, you're saying when pay-per-view, there are more likely to be people gathering together to defray the cost of it and everything. You maybe don't have that quite as much with Paramount Plus. But if you're increasing the number of people watching, that's a good thing.
It's like, I was thinking back to when UFC did that initial Fox show where they did the special to kind of kick it off. And it was in November, I think, of 2011, whatever that day was. But it was like 5.8 million viewers. And it peaked at 8.8. And us just thinking, oh my God, like how astronomical that number seemed to us.
And then they never did it again.
I know.
And that was because they put on the heavyweight title fight, which was
true.
Smart.
It's true, man. 100%. Yes.
They said heavyweight title fight free on Fox.
Yep.
Come get it. And that was really, and then they got those huge numbers for a 60-second fight. It would have gone way higher if the fight would have lasted a little longer. Yep. And instead of learning from that lesson, like, hey, you put a heavyweight title fight on TV, you kind of bring us back to the era where you could watch Rocky Marciano on network TV, brought to you by Barbasol or whatever, like the way my great-grandfather did. And then
Barbasol.
Instead of learning that lesson and being like, let's do that again, by the end of the Fox deal, the cards on Fox, the UFC on Fox cards, it was just be like, middleweight contender number 4 versus middleweight contender number 7, and then wonder why the ratings aren't that good.
Plus Paige Van Zandt.
Always Paige Van Zandt.
Michelle Watterson.
Sage Northcutt and Paige Van Zandt. Every time we can get them in.
Well, talk about a segue. Sage Northcutt, you just mentioned. We had one man who went and pursued options in Asia. We have another North American man by the name of Patchy Mix announced for Ryzen during the week. And I mean, the lads talked about it yesterday on Boys in the Back and did a great job speaking about it. But it's shocking. I think it's a good move for him. But I mean, we're kind of sifting through everything if we don't talk about everything we expected of this guy. You know, Chuck, I think we both agreed at the time before that first fight that he was the best signing made from Bellator to the UFC. 0-2, and he's out the door, already signed to a new promotion. Are you surprised to hear this? Like, are you surprised to get a third shot?
Not necessarily at that part of it, because his fights kind of suck, man. I mean, like that first one, who was he fighting? I'm sorry. Like his first one was against, it was a tough...
Bautista.
Yes, Bautista. And I remember we were like, okay, this will be a tough one for him out of the gate, but this is something he should handle. And this will be great for him to kind of just automatically catapult himself into that top space. And instead, it looked like he just had no rhythm. It almost looked disinterested, but it was like he couldn't pull the trigger. he wasn't trying for take. It was just weird, wasn't it? It was like it was like a fight spent and pending. Like there was nothing happening. And then his follow up was even worse. So for him to actually not be fighting a third time doesn't surprise me. But going back to the original premise, I mean, I was pretty convinced that he was the guy. He was the best kind of unsung guy coming over, you know, from Bellator. And it was going to be one of those situations where he would actually be a guy who'd contend and maybe win a belt at some point. I was that high on him and haven't talked to him. He was that high on himself. Like he was like, oh, yeah, that's it. This is what we're doing, baby. You know, and instead it was just. It's got to be one of the most anticlimactic crossovers that we've ever had. You know?
You agree with that, Ben?
Yeah, I mean, it's tough when you come in to the UFC with high expectations, like when we have those high expectations for you. It doesn't happen that often anymore. Like, this used to happen more where you'd see guys, where we had more competitors out there to the UFC where their fighters would get a little bit of a name, come in as a free agent, and have to hit the ground running. Because once the UFC pays more than just the regular entry-level contract in order to bring you over, they're not going to give you any easy fights. They're going to give you some tough fights. You're going to have to prove yourself right away. And we've seen, I mean, the example of Michael Chandler shows us that you don't necessarily have to come in and win them all. There are other ways to stick around and stay relevant if we care enough about you, if you are enough of a person that like stays in the minds of MMA fans one way or another. But if you don't, and if they look at the quality of your fights and they go, we don't see anything here that we really want to keep or that we can really sell to anybody that's worth our money, then it's really a tough cutthroat way of dealing with it because you come in there, we give you two shots at it. The first one I always got to think is not quite a wash, but your first fight in the UFC often does not tell us everything we need to know about you.
Eddie
a lot
Alvarez,
of guys,
Donald Cerrone,
a lot of guys will get those nerves. Even experienced fighters will come in there, get the octagon jitters that we used to call it, and we won't see the best of them. And it doesn't mean they're not going to go on to have a good career. They'll pull it together, and they give you one of those, and then they give you one more to find out if the first one was a fluke, and then they say, "All right, that's it. We're hitting the eject button on this one." It's tough, but that is also the situation you deal with when you come in already as a guy, or expect you to be a guy.
Who would you even compare him to? Like, you know, I was thinking about this, like a guy like that who he was a little bit unsung even with Bellator, right? Like I didn't feel like he got the shine. I was like, I remember talking to him when he's coming in and he's like, yeah, I think the UFC actually do a good job of promoting me. And like, my name will be more out there than it is. But I was thinking about this and I was like, I think a guy like Will Brooks, you remember like he was, so Will Brooks was like, he was on a crazy streak, something like 8 or 9, 10 fights where he'd won in Belgium, including Chandler twice. Yeah. Like he'd beat Chandler. So it felt like he was coming over and like, okay, this guy, he'll do work in the UFC. I think he went 1-3 and it was like, just kind of flushed out
though.
Just a weird
comparison.
It was like he just dropped off.
He also did not make any friends at any of the promotions. All of them were glad to see him go and didn't ever want to see him come back. And I it was the kind of thing where I was hearing about that from people at both UFC and Bellator, and I was just kind of like, what did he do, man?
I know.
And I never got a great answer about it, but
put that on the feature list, Ben. I want to read that article, please.
When there's enough of a consensus where everybody is like, man, good riddance, go on. I go, shit, all right, he must have done something.
Any chance of him coming back, lads?
Patchy Mix? You know,
he's
honestly,
still young.
When I heard that you signed with Ryzen, I was like, that actually might be a pretty great place for you.
Yeah.
Like, I think if anybody, I mean, who knows what the future for Ryzen is, but I was just like, yeah, you could go over there and you could do some business over there. Like, I could see that maybe that being a pretty good home, at least for like the next couple of years.
Remember Soka Ju when he came to the UFC?
Yeah.
That beat Ricardo Arona. They're like, oh, man, then he beats Lil Nog. And you're like, oh, shit, this guy's going to be, he's like huge Team Quest guy. Just doesn't pan out for some of these guys, man.
Yeah. Happened a few guys when they came over from Pride. It was kind of like their best days were spent the Saitama Superdome.
A lot of them. Yeah.
Big fight.
I think the drug testing might have had something to do. I don't know. It's just a theory.
Crazy. How dare you impugn the Pride drug testing system, which is
I'll give you your suitcase of money under the table when we're done here.
And only if you ask about it will we send a guy over to your hotel room to hand you a Dixie cup and be like, here, this will make you feel better. Pee on that.
Oh my God. We're just going to throw it away, but here.
There's a big, big boxing match in MSG this weekend. A massive, massive card, honestly. But the main event is obviously taking most of the headlines. Teofimo Lopez versus Shakur Stevenson for the Super Lightweight Championship of the World. A lot of testy things going down in this press conference too. It's a massive, massive fight. They're talking about Stevenson like he is the guy for this generation. Lopez, always aggressive. Well, not always. He's had a couple of duds, to be fair to him, when everyone was like, he's about to show up. He can show up and look like the best in the world. He can shock the world.
Who's his equivalent in MMA? Like, it's like, because I feel like we've had this guy where you're like, dude, when, if he's on, if his head's right, he's going to do work and he could win this fight, you know, and shock everybody. Like, because he's a pretty big, he's a big dog in this, considering his record and who he's fought. But yet, if his head's not right, you know, you see him kind of struggling
erratic,
there.
Right? Like, he's been quite erratic in the build up to it. Like, he's been a bit outlandish on social media. I don't know what to make of him. I just always remember him showing up against Lomachenko and everyone being like, it's too soon for this kid.
Yeah, almost exactly.
Almost like a Mayweather v. Canelo situation where they're like, he's only fighting him now because, you know, he wants to deal with this and he won't have to deal with him. And then he got that win. And then he goes and he loses to Gombosis.
Right.
And then he's kind of edged through a lot of fights where you thought he was going to put the foot down. Very interesting.
Josh Taylor. The southpaws, like the guys who are like, you know, some people don't want to match up with southpaws. He seems to do a good job with that. You know, the world class southpaw. So maybe he sees something in this matchup. But you know, he's got his father, like, who's been with him the whole way. This sometimes can lead to a very complicated emotional. Like, you know, we've seen this in boxing so long, and in some instances with MMA, and that can be a little weird. And also, man, I was at his fight. I was at that Times Square event. Against Barboza. Yeah, I was at that, and it was obviously very strange. It was like, it was not like a true boxing event. It was like we were watching an exhibition of some kind, you know. But he was on that, and I have to say, New York loves him, man. Like, he was the one guy that had, like, people all around who, you know, just in that small area that were just would not shut up. I mean, it was just one of, it was like being at an old school where everybody's shouting instructions, you know, got to dodge him, you got to, you know, use your left, use your, you know, that sort of thing. There was like five or six people behind me just yelling the whole time like this. And it, like, there was just love for him all around there. So that may play into it. As an emotional fighter, that may actually come into play. I know that Stevenson is from Newark and he wanted it in Madison Square Garden to kind of avoid having it at Barclays or something like that, like where it would be too far one-sided. But I think that crowd's going to be on his side.
I wanted to point out something about Elliot Wurstel's article on it, which I really enjoyed. Because one thing, he points out how, you know, at one point, Shakur Stevenson telling him, like, I figured you out. And Teofimo Lopez being like, listen, nobody figures me out because sometimes I suck. And like, sometimes I look like I don't want to be there. And you're like, oh, okay, yeah. So he knows that about himself. And he's turning it into a positive. The fact that, like, you can't know what you expect. What to expect from me, because even I don't know what to expect from me.
Amazing.
But I love that. I love this paragraph. I'll jiggle your balls, he, meaning Lopez, said to Stevenson that day, disappointing anyone who expected better from him. He then repeated the comment when Stevenson requested clarification before pulling his middle finger from the inside of his jacket and flashing it at Stevenson, yes, like a child.
Oh man,
so good, man. Get that article into you, lads. If you know, it's, if you're good, trying to get the juices flowing for that card, and it is a great card. Keyshawn Davis on the card, Shushu Carrington's on the card. It's a really, really good. Big Baby Miller is back. A lot to be excited about. Adam A's fight has been pulled. He is ill. He will not be fighting Austin Williams. That came out just before the great On Air Jordan showed me that. But brilliant, brilliant stuff from Wurstel. Like, I mean, it always is from Elliot. And
he's always got a unique angle for these fights. I got to dig it, you know?
Yeah.
I love telling somebody you'll jiggle their balls, because it's of course, the ants, the thing that they're going to say after that, they're, even whatever tough guy thing they think they have lined up, they're going to be like, I'm sorry, what? what are you?
That's like that
doing?
Key and Peele thing when the dudes are just talking their shit.
It's going to completely throw you off. Nothing you can say to that.
Yeah, it's a classic. Make sure you read it. But lads, that isn't all. because Ben, I know you've been waiting, and I'm so sorry that we kept it so late in the show, but it is in fact the Royal Rumble, and from your favorite place, Ben, the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia. Yeah, you must be, I mean, this is a home run, baby. You must be absolutely buzzing.
You know, listen, you don't have the Hulkster and the Ultimate Warrior over here on my wall if I don't know a thing or two about professional wrestling. Taking the Royal Rumble over to the actual Kingdom of Saudi Arabia is an interesting look, and I know a lot of wrestling fans aren't that crazy about it. I love the Royal Rumble. I've all like just conceptually, I think the Royal Rumble is such a fun thing. It's one of the few ones that I can get my kids kind of into. They don't give a damn about pro wrestling or any professional sports at all, but I told them this week where I was just saying something about like, hey, you know what Saturday is? It's the Royal Rumble. And they were like, oh, is that the one where your feet can't touch the floor? And I was like, yes, kind of.
That's right, it is.
You've got the
it's
basic
like the
idea.
Lava game, whatever. Don't touch the floor.
Yeah, yeah. It's like, that's something that kids can understand. Yeah. They're like, all right, feet don't touch the floor. I got it. And then they also, though, like, I think there's just so much fun stuff you can do with the order in which people appear. And that is always a fun part of the Royal Rumble. And like, even just talking with them about it, and they were just, you could see them working their way through the thought process where they're like, oh man, it'd be a really bad deal to have to be the first person in there. And I was like, yes, exactly. And they're like, it'd be great if you were the last person. And I was like, you're getting
the advantages.
You're getting it. And then it was just like, we had moved on to talking about other topics. And then one of them was like, what if two people were friends and they both ended up
exactly.
as like the two people? And I was just like, welcome to the world of professional wrestling. These and other questions will be explored over and over again over the series of generations.
So true.
Is Blaise still into it? Will you be watching Choke?
Oh my God. He does. I mean, he gets in and out of it, you know, but at the same time, he never misses this. Like I watch this every single year. I was doing a little preview and I'm like, at its best, it's almost like a Hieronymus Bosch painting, like where like, there's so much going on, you can't even take it. Like at its best, so there's like 18 dudes in there. And it's funny if you fixate on one guy and you'll see him just sitting in the corner dead for like a full minute. Doesn't move, like he's just in the corner. And I'm like, what is it? Like, so what happens suddenly when they get up? They recharge and they get up and they go back at it again. It's ridiculous, man. And to this day, the little kid in you wakes up every time the music comes on for the who is it? Yeah. Who is it? Like, I won't even know half of them at this point, but like, you always want to know who is it? Who's coming in there this time, you know?
Tell you one fella you're going to know is the big guy.
Yeah.
Brock Lesnar.
He'll be there.
I don't know if you've seen, there we go. I don't know if you've seen recent photos of the man. Still looks pretty good getting off the bus.
Wow, really?
Yeah, he does. Okay. Look at that.
Still looks like he knows where they keep the weights. there have been moments just when you see him move around sometimes where you go, oh, wait a minute, is age starting to gradually turn Brock Lesnar into more of a something closer to a mortal man? But also you see him pop the top off and you're like,
oh God,
you know, remember when he failed that drug test and against Mark Hunt and he blamed the foot cream? He thought maybe it was contaminated foot cream.
It was foot cream.
Fellas, I don't want to talk out of school here, but I'm starting to think maybe it wasn't a contaminated foot cream.
Oh, come on.
The foot cream had contamination in it.
I mean,
it was pretty clear, wasn't it? Like, oh, man.
Where can we get that cream, though? Seriously.
check out Brad Gilmore's. Hit me in the chat afterward.
lovely. You got the link. Check out Brad Gilmore's article. If you are like me, not a big WWE guy, he lays it all out there for you. What to expect? You know, what are the big talking points from the world? It's good. Just give yourself a read. It's on Netflix.
What do you think it costs Brock Lesnar? Like, this is a guy. If you ever talk, he's just the grumpiest, meanest. Yeah. Like he's like, it's just not a pleasant thing. And like for them to get him to go to Saudi Arabia to go compete in this thing, I mean, it's just they got to be opening up the pocketbook pretty big here. I mean, he's just not going to do that. This is a guy who moved, first of all, to like remote Minnesota, like up by Lake Ida, where I visited him one time, a long time, over the border finally, so he could get even more obscure from people. This is not something he would do unless you're really, like, really coming correct.
I believe you could maybe sell this to him on the basis of Brock Lesnar not knowing exactly how far away Saudi Arabia is.
Just past Canada.
That might be your best hope. And he'll be like, how long is the flight? And you're like, not that long.
We could just straight through.
Yeah, you know? you gotta be comfortable on that plane. It's a direct flight, and there's movies, you know?
Not that long.
The Beast Incarnate is back. My guy is Abba Femi. I just found out who he is like last week, and I'm like, oh, yeah. He is as big as Brock Lesnar.
This as a specimen. That man's a physical specimen.
He's my guy. We've drawn.
What about this Heyman faction, though? I mean, they're going to have to go against each other. This is, again, you know, there's going to be some betrayals.
Well, once I read some of our Royal Rumble coverage, and I was like, oh, you're telling me there's a chance I might turn on the TV Saturday afternoon and see the ageless Chris Jericho show back up, who I remember watching when I was in high school. And I'm like,
him debuting. Yeah, crazy. The Millennium thing. Fuck.
Jesus.
We are old, bro. Chuck, we need to talk about your hat, because we talked about your hat throughout the week. And it is a fantastic piece that you wrote from your attendance at Zuffa Boxing 1.
Yeah.
You're obviously captivated by the product. Zuffa Boxing 2 this weekend. Are you going to be able to fit it into your long list of things you need to watch?
This is being worn unironically. Okay. No, wait, I don't know what ironical means, I guess. But anyways, I'm just wearing this hat. It was what was your question? I mean, I'm positive as the only guy in Las Vegas who showed up for Zuffa Boxing and didn't stick around for UFC 324. I was the only guy who went there specifically for that.
That's what we're talking about. Like, imagine anyone seeing Chuck. All right, you going to the fights.
See you at the fights tomorrow. Not me.
Not those fights. The real fights.
Gotta catch a flight out Saturday morning.
I know.
Let me know how it turns out.
Yeah. But it sounds like no matter which way I'd went about it, if I had just watched the telecast and caught, you know, Max Kellerman and all of that stuff, I would have been equally disenchanted. But being there was not a fun thing, boys. It was not fun to sit through that. every fight.
What did the rest of the crowd, did you get the sense that other people were like, yes, this is what I expected, this is what I came here for, or were they also just sort of like, this is a little
low-out game? Well, if you're at like if you're just in an intimate show in Missoula, right? Like, you went to an intimate show, there's, let's say, 400 people there. They're probably going to be fans, like, that are going to be like, hey, drink some beer and let's just have fun, man. We're here. This isn't the kind of crowd that the Apex draws. They're like a lot of influencers, and, you know, Nate Diaz was there, and so was, like, Tiki Goshen. Remember that guy? Like, he's hanging out. It's like, it's a lot of people who are associated with Fight Game or influencers or people who are a little more well-heeled than you would. And you would get, so it's like there's already this kind of lack of passion from just that fan base. Now, I'm not saying that'll always be their fan base, but that's who was there for this particular one. And it was like the first fight on the main card drew a little bit of like an energy, like there was but it was a pretty good fight. The kid from Philadelphia, I forget his name now, like he was standing there, he was giving him a show. He ended up winning. The next fight lost everybody. In fact, everybody just kind of like went and, you know, we're at the concessions and we're walking around. There was
buying
almost
hats.
No interest.
Were they buying merch?
Buying hats. That's when I was in the hat line. Yeah. But I don't have my shirt that says I was there, pizza years in the middle. And
I was there.
And then the main event came on, and I don't know how to describe it, because it was like a main event you're always leading towards, especially in boxing. It's all geared toward that main event.
Yeah.
You could hear a pin drop from like rounds 2 to 8. It was just, it had died so badly in that room. Like, it was just, I don't know, man. I had just never seen a main event that had that lack of energy. So it was a drowsy affair, man. I don't know what else to say. It's almost like you walk out of there and a couple people were joking, like, wow, is your heart stopped racing after that thing? You know, being sarcastic, because it was just like, it was that bad in that sense.
You know what's crazy? You kind of called this. Like, I was like, wow, the biggest winner out of this is going to be Callum Walsh. And you said, when I said that, well, either the biggest winner or loser. And I feel like, That's kind of what's happened.
I felt bad for those guys, man. Yeah. They were competing in a unnatural environment, man. It was like a sparring session that you were peeking in on. It was that quiet.
I knew guys from Ireland who are boxing fans that stayed up for that. Like, they were texting me before the main event, and they texted me the next morning saying, I just went to bed halfway through it.
So, like, bad.
You're watching the boxing match you have stayed up for, and you're just like,
you're already that committed.
I am going to bed. No, I stayed up for the whole thing because I'm hardcore. But
at this point,
think about this weekend. Your weekend there, sleep rhythms are so thrown off, Pete. Your body wouldn't know what to do if you went to bed at a reasonable hour on a Saturday or Friday.
I just come out with the most beautiful skin. I don't know if you guys saw, but I had a bit of a school reunion there yesterday. Have we seen the picture of 12-year-old Pete Carroll here?
Your hair was much darker then.
I have a receding hairline and I'm 12.
Do we have?
Oh, there it is.
Look at that.
Terrifying what Blanche's sound can do to a child. I was talking about this haircut with someone earlier and I was like, do you know what that is? That's my mom just getting me a buzz cut every 3 months. Yeah. And whatever happens beyond that is up to Brill Cream and me.
I like how in the screenshot there, we captured my comment on it that I sent to you after
what was the
DM
comment? I
on
couldn't
Instagram.
Read it.
It was a note about pizza. You could see the zipper of the tracksuit in this.
That's what I told him.
Yeah,
I told him something very similar.
A lot of people were like, I think you robbed me when you were 12.
I mean, that looks like a juvenile hall mugshot right there, where you're just like, this is an at-risk youth.
Do you know that's what the thing is? There's jokes don't same as yours. The most fucked up thing about this is, like, because everyone got these letters that we wrote to ourselves and these pictures. And I was like, what's the story with the picture? Like, what was that? And they were like, we walked up to you as a 12-year-old and said, we're taking a picture of you to show your 38-year-old self in 25 years. And that's the face I made.
Wow.
Like, what the f-? I am hot, man. I want to start a
skeptical. It's very...
You're like, I won't be alive then. So I'm going to...
He definitely robbed your 3310, which is a Nokia phone from back in the day. And, you know, who knows? I'm not saying shit on here. I might incriminate myself. Just take my lunch money. lads, I was just wondering, would you like to hear what I wrote to myself?
Yes. Yes. See, I didn't know that that's what this was a part of. All right, let's hear. This is fascinating now.
I can get through this quick.
Okay.
Very disappointing, by the way. This is terrible. There is no doubt about it. Hi, my name is Peter, and I'm in Miss O'Brien's sixth class. I'm in a family of four people. My dad, who is a Tottenham fan and is named Liam. My loving mother, whose name is Margie. And my brother, Luke, who is the best brother alive. He supports Chelsea. These are my number one family ever. Yeah, I mean, you're fine. Good stuff, Peter.
Who's number two?
I have four close friends. Daniel Sansovini, in brackets I've wrote Italian, because that's what he is. A.K.A. Sanso, Eamon Kidd, A.K.A. Amo. Both of them are in the same year as me, and Sanso is in the same class as me. Stephen Murta, a.k.a. Stee and Quinner, are in secondary school. When I grow up, I want to be a lawyer and rich enough to buy Manchester United and Ferrari. Not a Ferrari, the team Ferrari.
Wow.
My two favorite sporting teams... sorry, that was a comment on the other thing.
Ronaldo, that feels Pele... Like- I'm a, like 12-year-old you did maybe not understand how global economics worked. You thought like lawyers make a lot of money and then they buy sports teams, right? That happens.
You think that's bad. You're wait till you fucking see what happens next. Okay, Ronaldo, Pele, Maradona, and Muhammad Ali are my idols. They weren't. Now into the past is where.
Why are you telling yourself stuff that you would know about yourself?
I don't think I knew what was happening. Here's
why are you telling yourself who your friends and family are? That's the one thing that you should definitely know.
Don't dig too deep in this.
Listen, Ben, the next part, if you think that's bad, this is where I've gone with the next part. Now into the past. Over the last century, there were many tragic deaths, such as the assassination of JFK.
Wow.
Princess Diana and Mother Teresa, they have made the first test tube baby for people who can't have babies. The main talk in Ireland now is the devolution, which is Northern Ireland having their own ministers and stuff. I think this could be a major step towards peace. In 1969, man first walked on the moon. It was watched on television worldwide. Neil Armstrong, Buzz Aldrin, and Michael Collins were the crew. Armstrong said, one small step for man. And a giant leap for mankind.
Just in case that was no longer going to be information that was available later on.
You were like, this is some shit that I need to know is about the moon landing. Also, I also love, over the last century, there were many tragic deaths. Like, oh, really? Over the course of 100 years, some people died?
I thought it was, like, as I was standing there and reading this, I was like, did I imagine, like, people had forgot and I was going to open this up in Blanchard sound and just be like, lads, JFK was assassinated. And they're like, what? What the fuck? And I'm like, yeah, and Princess Diana is dead.
It just seems like you were trying to prove, I got a handle on current events. I know, I'm paying attention.
Trying to prove to himself all these years later.
Final paragraph. A look to the future now. This is a look to the
future. Okay, this should be good.
And... it doesn't deliver, again. Everyone thinks the year 2000 is going to bring flying cars and stuff, but I think it would all be the same.
Wow.
I think smoking might be banned, and maybe we'll have computerized maids, but not too much. So I hope you enjoyed this, and I hope I do all the things I said. Two things I said. I would buy Manchester United and Ferrari. Good boy. I love you. That is how I signed off. Just telling myself. There he is.
There he is.
What a genius.
There's the author.
That kid loves you. Look into his eyes, Pizzi. That kid right there, he loves you.
He doesn't look like he loves me at all. He looks like he shanked someone seconds before.
He might be a little disappointed in you. He might think, all right, that guy is a little bit of a letdown. From the high hopes I had. Yet.
No, he owns yet. Neither.
Yes, that's today. Important to say yet. But he does look like he could do the helicopter in a breakdancing movie. He could just like get to...
Well, I'm glad I said. I was so disappointed at like the writing. I was just like, and the rest of the lads were like, we couldn't even spell, dude. Like, this is pretty impressive. And I'm like, I'm very upset about this.
I just want to point out that if you are a longtime viewer of The Crack, you have now seen Pete C. read a letter from his 12-year-old self in addition to his dream diary.
Yes.
Live on this program. Just where else are you going to get content like this?
I don't know. Look, we're going to find something. They're going to call me to open up something else I fucking wrote as a child. I'm sure soon. But do we have any super chats, Jordan?
There we go.
Yeah.
Potential UFC events.
Venues.
Oh, sorry. In Europe in 2026. Well, they just go to the UK and France now. So lock them in. I mean,
what, no double.
The Accor Arena and the O2 Arena, they don't even fucking look elsewhere. That is it.
What about Croke Park?
Hopes for Spain seem like they have maybe been put on the back burner for now.
Well, it is gone, isn't it? Like, that is fucking dead. Georgia is dead. Yeah. I mean, I'm sorry, mate. I would love them to explore the region, but they have previously. We were all only talking about it with some other European media guys 2 weeks ago. We're like, that was one of the best times to cover the sport. You're just going to a different European country every month. It was great, but
Stockholm,
they don't seem to be interested. Hamburg.
Yeah, Hamburg.
Oh, man. Yeah. So good. Prague.
Well, at this point, you're just not going to roll up into Poland and beat what KSW is doing in either terms of live event production or the crowd enthusiasm. So,
no. Yeah. You're right. Or Czech Republic and Octagon. Like, Ariel's very right in what he's saying about it becoming like the territories, the wrestling territories back in the day.
Yeah.
Harry's in France, WOW FC in Spain, as it is. Like, all these fucking promotions are doing really, really well there. It's like, it's kind of so open compared to the US, where PFL can't do shit there, but they're selling out events left, right, and center in Europe. Anything else there, Jordan? Hey, fellas, advice for someone looking to get into MMA journalism. Also, Petey, what do you think about Curtis Campbell v. Danny Silva? I got Kurt by sub. Curtis Campbell, very, very good. Very, very good submissions. I would say that is a very good bet. In terms of getting into MMA media, I personally just started going to regional events in 2009. I don't know how the fuck I ended up here. So Chuck and Ben.
I would say instead, become a lawyer and buy Manchester United. Yes. I think that's a better plan.
Yes. I mean, it's a more realistic plan at this point too, Ben. I don't think there's many seats at the table around here. Unless you're an influencer. Try to be an influencer.
MMA influencer.
Or comedian.
Now you're talking. You just go and you just go, what the fuck? And they get you in. Credentials. Yeah. No problem. Anything else there, Jordan?
That person's like, I wasted my money. Nervous. Whoever sent him that was like, I wasted my money. Like,
you wasted money. Look, we love yous anyway. Thank you for everything. From 12-year-old Pete Carroll, from Chuck Mendenhall, Ben Folks, Oscar Losef, On Air Jordan. I don't know if the music's still playing, but I'm signing off anyway. It is Uncrowned Saturday, baby. Check us out tomorrow. We'll have the watch along. We will have the post-fight show. Get over to Uncrowned. Read everything there because it will get you set up exactly where you need to be for a whole day of vegetation on your favorite sitting device. We love you all very much. Thank you for joining us. Goodbye. See you next week. Mwah.
All right.